You want me to come help you, brother?
Okay, thank you. We'll call to order this meeting of the Veterans and Emergency Services Committee on whatever day it is, April 14th, 2009. Welcome. We have a crowd today. We will open, first of all, a public hearing on HJM 12. Representative Barton, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Molina, could we start off with this one?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 12 urges Congress to enact legislation increasing veterans' access to health care, and particularly for veterans who live in remote and rural areas. We have no amendment to this. There is no fiscal or revenue impact to this, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brent Barton. I represent House District 51, which is East Clackamas County. And I really appreciate your time and attention to this matter today, as HJM 12 is intended to really get at, I suppose, a problem that does not often get the attention it deserves. I believe that this committee and, for example, the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services has taken a careful look at, for example, the problems associated with health care, education, employment, and housing. But HJM 12 gets at a less looked at topic, which is transportation, particularly in the rural parts of our state. As this committee perhaps knows, Oregon currently has 10 community-based outpatient clinics for veterans, and these facilities provide primary care and some mental health services. However, if a veteran requires specialized service, they have to choose between going to Portland and Roseburg. And as you can imagine, rural veterans often have a hard time accessing these facilities. Now, there's currently a volunteer organization designed to help veterans access the facilities in Roseburg and Portland. But there are three problems with the volunteer system. First of all, it doesn't cover the entire state. They're not handicap accessible currently. And simply, there's a shortage of volunteer drivers. This issue can be addressed, and HJM 12 urges Congress to do that by making permanent the recent increase in mileage reimbursement for veterans who travel for health care beyond certain distances. And I admit this is not a panacea, but it's a first step.
Thank you. Any questions? Oh, come on. Well, it's a timely matter that we're going to take up talking about a task force on transportation issues in general. Many of these House joint memorials that we're working on in this committee sort of have a congressional counterpart lined up to tackle the issue. Does this one have a congressional person?
Madam Chair, I'm almost certainly it does, and I want to say off the top of my head, I actually shouldn't say off the top of my head, yes, it does. I cannot tell you.
I have Representative Wyden penciled into my file for some reason. Does that sound right to you?
That's.
And I not only that, I'm getting head nodding in the back of, the back of your
Madam
head.
Madam Chair, thank you for refreshing my recollection. I believe Senator Wyden is.
Yes, I see that. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, Senator Wyden. Thank you for... Oops. Don't tell me. Well, that always makes me...
Watching on TV right now.
I'm sorry. My apologies. And, I think that's a really helpful package that we're being able to bring forward this year, because we do have our delegation ready to start moving some of these issues. So, any further discussion? We don't have anyone else signed up on this one, so thank you for bringing it to us.
And thank you for your time.
I'm suspecting when we get ready to move it, you'll be willing to carry this one.
I very much appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll see you
this afternoon.
Okay. Thanks. Yes, more committees to come today. Do we have any fiscal reports on HJM 12?
No.
Okay. All righty. Since we don't have the necessary paperwork.
We do have it.
Oh, we do. I'm sorry. We do have the fiscal on this one.
It's ready to move now, if you wish.
Okay, I will close the public hearing on HJM 12 and open a work session on HJM 12. Is there any committee discussion on this bill? Seeing none, I think we're ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion. We move HJM 12 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. We have a motion to move forward HJM 12 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Debbie, if you would, please. Excused. Excused.
Aye.
Aye.
Widener?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Matthews?
Aye.
Kellen?
Aye. Thank you. Having received the necessary majority, House HJM 12 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the good Representative Barton interested in carrying it. Thank you, committee. I don't see Representative Jensen. Okay. Okay. Yes, I understand. The noise we're hearing on the machine could be someone's cell phone ringing. They seem to interfere with the connectivity, so if you could turn those off, I would appreciate it.
Madam Chair, that was my cell phone being turned off.
Thank you, sir. It's not necessary that you admitted to that, but thank you.
Again. He's just waiting for a moment to shut it off and to remind everybody else to extinguish theirs, too.
All righty. The reason I was sort of looking around is that we are expecting another representative who I know is on a tight time frame with his other committee that's meeting simultaneously, and we may need to break away and move the bills around a little bit. But until that happens, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 98. Mr. Molina.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 98 establishes the Task Force on Veterans Transportation to study methods for creating a statewide transportation system to assist veterans in accessing health care facilities. Sunsets on the first day of the 2011 legislative session, declares emergency effective on passage. There are no amendments to this, and there's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. We have not received a statement on it yet.
Okay. Paula Brown and Paul Evans. Welcome. Hello.
Thank you.
I will let you choose how you're going to start this one off.
Okay, I'll start it off. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown, and I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 98, which creates a Veterans Transportation Task Force. The Governor's Task Force on Veterans Service learned that during the course of its work that veterans need a consistent, dependable transportation system to and from VA medical facilities. For many Oregonians who live in rural and remote parts of the state, transportation is nearly impossible. The situation is even worse for our wheelchair-bound veterans. Oregon does have a limited veterans transportation system of about 23 vans operated by Disabled American Veterans Service Organization in partnership with the federal VA. There are not enough vans, however, to cover the state, and these vans cannot accept wheelchair-bound passengers, so those veterans who are in a wheelchair are unable to utilize that system. The task force believes this is an important issue, but simply did not have the time to conduct an in-depth research regarding existing transportation networks, strategic partnerships, and other methods to create a cohesive veterans transportation system, so this is why the task force is being proposed. Understanding the veterans' transportation needs also is a federal issue, and we've submitted Senate Joint Memorial 2, which urges Congress to fund an Oregon veterans transportation system. We believe by creating the task force, we'll be able to create innovative public-private partnerships to help veterans access health care, the health care that they need and they've earned. We very much appreciate your support of our veterans in this issue, and thank you for your consideration. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Going to, if you wouldn't mind, I think we're going to break on this one and come back to this discussion so that we don't shortchange it. Thank you. I'm going to close temporarily the public hearing on Senate Bill 98 and open a, remind me to come back to the other one too. Thank you. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3254. Representative Jensen, thank you for joining us. Mr. Molina.
Certainly, Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3254 allows radio and data communications districts to be formed as special districts by local regions. It authorizes districts to acquire, maintain, and operate voice and data communication systems for use by public safety agencies within their boundaries. Authorizes districts to contract with the United States for acquisition and operation of radio and data communication facilities and related property. It takes effect on 91st day following adjournment. Signee, die. There are no amendments at this time, and we have no revenue impact at this point, but there is, fiscal is telling us there's a potential fiscal impact on state or local governments, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome, Representative Jensen. We are honored to have you here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this bill and for hearing my opening comments, which will be very short because we have a number of speakers that, for the bill that I would like to kind of introduce to you. The bill, basically, as staff has so well pointed out to you, allows radio and data districts to be formed as special districts. This comes about because of a lot of past experience that has taken place in the area, and the speakers will be acquainting you, I think, with those as, in as much detail as you all will need. Speaking today on this bill will be Mike Roxbury, who is the fire chief from Umatilla Fire District. Lindsey Ball, who many of you already know and have seen in a number of capacities around the Capitol here, is currently director of the ON, the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. Then Sally Jones, who's administrator for the Columbia 911 Communications District. Dennis Daugherty, who is county commissioner from Umatilla County. And then there are some other Umatilla Morrow officials here from fire and police. We have Ken Matlock, who is the Morrow County Sheriff, Lieutenant Glenn Deal, who is the Umatilla County Sheriff, and Judge Terry Tallman, who is with the Morrow County Board. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, we, as I said, appreciate your hearing this bill. It's something that's very important to these folks in this district, and I think it's pretty narrow as far as the subject matter, and hope you'll be able to move it out for us. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'd be glad to answer any questions, but I would ask you to be kind to me because this is not an area that I have great expertise in, and that's why the army of people to back me up.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Jensen, or do we want to defer to his army?
We need to ask the experts.
Jensen's army.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. I know your time is as complicated as everyone else's, so I appreciate you giving us a little bit of it. Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, if I could, I think I breached protocol and didn't give my name, rank, and serial number.
I believe I missed it as well, so where are you?
For the record, this is State Representative Bob Jensen from House District 58. Thank you.
Thank you for catching it. I'm going to let you folks sort of decide how you want to lead off. I'm guessing Chief Roxbury and Lindsey Ball probably start out. Is that what you had in mind? Or if you want to orchestrate it differently, feel free. Whoever would like to come forward, we have anywhere up to three chairs.
I'll go first, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Radio.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Roxbury. I'm the fire chief of the Umatilla Fire District in Umatilla, Oregon. Myself and the gentleman you see behind me and the ladies are here today to ask for your support for House Bill 3254. As you were made aware in previous meetings, and I have a variety of handouts for you to look at, our area is in kind of a unique situation in that we've got a radio system that was built for the project of destroying the nerve gas out at the Umatilla Chemical Depot. Their system was built to the tune of at least $14 million, and we've been operating on it for the past 6 or so years with pretty fabulous radio communications. Sometime next year, probably May or June of next year, the depot program will cease to exist because the last munition will be destroyed, and funding is going to start drying up at that point. That puts the local agencies and jurisdictions in the position of having to find a way to fund that radio system without the federal FEMA dollars that are currently funding it. When that happens, we've looked at a variety of ways to fund the system, and there really was no practical way to do it on a fee-based system. The only solution that we could really come up with that could generate the revenue is a special district. Under the currently enacted legislation for forming a special district, there was no legislative piece that allowed for a special district to exist for the purposes of supporting a radio system. And so House Bill 3254 is our attempt to get that rectified so that we can, in fact, form a local district to take care of our radio system on our own. We'll be seeking voter approval for that venture, assuming that we can get the legislation passed. We'll go and try to get the special district formed to fund that. The handouts that you're receiving now are basically the notes of my presentation here, and there's also a page with some colored maps and a couple pages after that of information on who's currently using the system and who's currently supporting the system in terms of resolutions. And on the last page is a list of districts currently existing and cities that desire to be a part of the special district. The third page is all the current agencies that are using the system at this point, 31, independent, police, fire, FBI, you name it. We've got everybody using that system out there, 31 agencies, and this is all in an effort to maintain that system post-federal funding. The two pages that you start off with there, the first page, just to give you some idea, it has a bunch of little towers all over it, and that was what the radio systems in our area used to look like before CSEP. Everybody and their brother had their own little tower, and everybody used their own little system. The second page is what it looks like now, with about half a number of towers up and probably five times the coverage area. So we've got something pretty special out there, and we need a way to keep it, and this is our attempt.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Chief Roxbury?
Just
a
quick question.
Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief, we talked yesterday, and I just wonder if you could expand, maybe for the committee, I don't know if you got to everybody, but just about what this would mean to the safety of the men and women out there serving out there in rural Oregon, and how this would impact, of course, to their benefit, for the safety of them and the community.
Madam Chair and Representative Matthews, you hit the nail on the head. Interoperability is the word that we use in communications, and that's our ability to talk to those people who we're supposed to be partnering with. In eastern Oregon, for sure, we have big problems with range fires, for instance, an example. And with the system that we currently have, everybody in both counties is on the system and has their own ability to talk amongst themselves and or to talk to the people they're providing mutual aid for. Rural Oregon, of course, you know, probably is mostly made up of volunteer agencies and smaller paid departments that rely heavily on mutual aid units from other towns to come help when something big happens. And prior to this radio system, we had no good way to communicate. It often meant having to stop what you were doing and have a face-to-face meeting somewhere so that everybody knew what was going to go on, and then you'd go off and do your thing and come back some of the time. Now we have an ability to freely communicate across two counties and 4,000 square miles. Anybody can be anywhere, and we can still be got with the radio. And in terms of safety, there probably isn't anything more we could do at this point that was more dramatic than making sure people could communicate from one side of a fire to the other, or from one side of a town to the other, or in a police pursuit when police are pursuing somebody perhaps out of their jurisdiction and into another one. It's the key to everything, and there's probably not one of you up there that hasn't at least once heard on the news after a large disaster when something happens, and then they start the debriefing of it, and the first thing that somebody says usually is, well, we couldn't communicate. We had no ability to talk to the responders in the tower or the people on the ground. We've eliminated that problem with the help of the federal government and the CSAP program, and we desperately desire to maintain that.
Thank you. Mr. Ball, it sounds like they're doing some of your work for you.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the OWEN project, the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network project. Yes, they are doing some of the work for OWEN. Because as everyone knows, we're building a statewide public safety communication system for the state of Oregon. And that system is built upon the foundation of and cornerstone of partnerships. And Morrow County and Umatilla County are part of the partnership process as we build this system out for the state of Oregon. And it's not just the partnership that brings interoperability, it also brings an economic savings for the state of Oregon. We have estimated that the savings to the state by forming partnerships as we have with Umatilla and Morrow County has saved the state of Oregon $60 million in the build out of the system. Of the 14 radio sites that are a subject for the discussion with OWEN that result from the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program, which is the chemical burn at the Umatilla Army Depot, OWEN will take over and manage 8 of those sites, as Morrow and Umatilla County will manage 6 of those sites. It's a partnership that fits well with both of us, but Morrow and Umatilla counties do need to secure a revenue stream, and the proposed House Bill 3254 would solve that problem for them. And I want to point out that I think this is very important to note, that they haven't come before the legislature to ask for money with their hand out. They just simply come to the legislature to ask for the authority to generate a revenue stream so they can invest in their own communication system. With that, I conclude my testimony. I thank the two counties for being a partner, and also the committee for hearing and considering House Bill 3254.
Thank you. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Cowan. When I read through this bill, I'm wanting to make sure I understand. This isn't just for this area. It's for the whole state. So anybody in the state that wanted to try to form a special district for communications would be able to. Is that correct?
Chair Cowan, Representative Freeman, that is how I read the bill as well.
Okay. Thank you.
And I believe that is the intention of the bill at this point in time. There are many local districts that are formed through this particular ORS, transit districts and all of those sorts of things, but for some strange reason, radio districts seem to be excluded at this particular point in time. And that's what this bill is seeking to change, as I understand it, if that's correct.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Sally?
Chair Cowan, co-chairs Freeman and Matthews, and members of the committee. My name is Sally Jones. I'm the administrator for Columbia 911 Communications District, and I am the co-chair of the Oregon APCO-NENA Combined Chapters Legislative Committee, which is the professional organization for public safety communications delivery in the state. I'm also a longtime member of the Special Districts Association of Oregon Legislative Committee. And both of those organizations, Oregon APCO-NENA and Special Districts Association, urge your support for House Bill 3254. There's a couple of reasons that, in particular, that we're in support of this. On a a broader base than Umatilla and Morrill County. And that is because the radio and data communications infrastructure that supports public safety across the state, and by public safety I mean city police, county sheriffs, FBI, state police, fire district, city fire, emergency medical services, and after-hour public works, ODOT, OSP, ODF, you name it. Everyone works together at a local, state, and federal level, including districts and everything else. These radio systems, radio and data systems, are very expensive, and an individual entity can't afford to support it for themselves any longer. So what's happening across the state and across the nation is that jurisdictions are partnering up and sharing the cost, but also sharing the efficiencies and the effectiveness of radio and data infrastructure. That's happening, of course, in Umatilla and Morrill County. It's happening in the metropolitan area, urban area in Portland. Columbia 911 Communications District is also a member of the Urban Area Security Initiative, or UASI, which is the Portland area special funding through the Department of Homeland Security for emergency preparedness for certain cities across the United States. That area, the metropolitan area, is working together to establish a radio system that is owned by all of the entities, which includes Clark County, Washington, as well as some neighboring counties. They look toward the formation of a special district to govern and fund this kind of infrastructure because it's so complex, and also because the organizational structure of a special district is very flat and focused. And let me explain that for a moment. All of those entities can form an intergovernmental agreement, and many do. In other words, they join together by agreement, and then they figure out formulas to divide up the cost. And oftentimes these formulas are very complex. They involve activity statistics and the property value, assessed value of the particular jurisdiction. City councils look at it. County boards look at it. The feds look at it. All these different partners look at these fees from different perspectives, and then they're all represented on a user board. And oftentimes there are many, many hours people trying to figure out if they're representing their jurisdiction adequately and whether or not they're paying a fee formula fairly. It's very contentious, it's very complex, and it's very complicated. And all everyone's trying to do is just represent their area fairly. Under a special district formation, there would be an elected governing board representing the geographic areas as well as the individual users that are using the system. But and there would be an administration, but their entire focus would be on that particular system. And if the voters approve funding for the system, then that funding is dedicated and the partners would no longer pay fees or try to figure out if the fee formula was fair. Now, oftentimes, the rate to support this kind of structure is fairly low when it's spread across, as in the proposed case, over two counties, or in the urban area, which may be spread across five or six or even eight counties, depending on who partners up. So it spreads it out across the property taxes. It's not according to fee formulas, which people disagree over, and it's still representative governance. So it is a good solution, I believe. The other piece of it is that by granting the authority to form this kind of special district, it does not usurp something that cities are already doing or counties are already doing. I'm not aware of any individual city or individual county that is planning into the future to maintain and keep their own radio system, for example. Most of them are partnering already and looking for opportunities for more partnering because of the expense and the critical need for the systems. So this seems to be a great solution, and it was very timely that Umatilla and Mora County proposed it, but I do want to emphasize that SDAO, Oregon APCO, NENA, the urban area counties are also in support of authorizing this kind of formation.
Thank you
very
much.
Any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
appreciate that information. Mm-hmm. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair. Are any of your cities approaching the maximum assessed value amount of the tax where compression will occur?
Compression does occur in some of the taxing codes within the Columbia 911 Communications District. When we do our financial forecasting, we take that into account. But it does have an impact. We're also subject to, you know, enterprise zone exemptions or urban renewal exemptions, things like that. So when forecasting the amount of money that we need to run operations, then we have to take those kinds of impacts into consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a consideration that we have to face.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment that the kinds of efficiencies and criticality that this witness has talked about is exactly why Owen has 33 partners and growing.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Doherty, welcome.
Thank you.
Were there others who wanted to bring up with you or that wanted to testify on this? Do you know?
Madam Chair, we had agreed as a group that my testimony would conclude it, but I would like to invite Moore County Judge Terry Tallman up to join me.
Certainly. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Doherty. Commission members.
Well, we're honored to have you both. Welcome.
Appreciate it.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, my name is Dennis Doherty, Umatilla County Commissioner, resident of Hermiston. In Hermiston, we kind of feel like we're the epicenter of the impact that would be incurred locally if something happened at the depot. Irrigan can easily claim the same with equal justification as can any of the other cities in that community. That experience, of course, is what leads us to where we are today and brings us before you. The first thing I want to say is that if you'll look in the back of the room, you'll see all these folks in uniform.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, actually.
It could be, but it's got to also be kind of satisfying because what they represent is how all of the communities that are represented in the third sheet in your handout, the what we call the user group, how they have come together and formed a response team for emergency services in the event that we had a major event. And of course, once you have that kind of a team and the nerve center that is represented by the communication system, then you've got a team that can respond to other events that affect all of them. So we're real proud of them, and we're real proud of the system that's been developed. Represented in that group are people from, at the very least, the Umatilla Morrill County Sheriff's Offices, Umatilla Morrill County Emergency Services, Hermiston Fire and Police, Stanfield Fire and I think Police, Umatilla Fire and Police, and perhaps some others. There are multiple representatives from those entities. And they're here to show you that, number one, they're together, and number two, this is important to them. It's also important to the two county governing bodies because at the inception, when this federal opportunity presented itself, we told the responders that, look, when the federal funding goes away, the counties are not going to be able to pick up the cost of owning and operating this system that serves all of you. There needs to be a new entity to do that. And as Chief Roxbury told you, they've studied on this for a number of years, and in the meantime, they've done all that we asked them to do, which was come together as a group and manage and operate this system. So the two governing bodies appointed seven representatives from that user group, and we call that the user board, and they do that governance. They don't have any particular legal empowerment other than the appointments that the two governing bodies made, but they've done that, and they've done it for a period of years, and it's worked well. So what they're asking you for in terms of creating the authority for them to form a special district would be a natural, logical, helpful sequence to that experience that we've already got. So we're not really inventing a new wheel. We're just kind of inventing another wheel to go on the wagon that we've had for this period of time. There are just a couple of talking points I want to add to what you've heard. I think most of you met with the advanced team that was in yesterday, so you probably have your questions answered. But on that first sheet in the small packet, you look at all these facilities that were out there originally. Mm-hmm. And those combined facilities owned, operated, and serving all of these entities did not provide very good coverage in our terrain. You've already heard that. The new system with fewer facilities provides approximately 95% coverage. That means in that whole 4,000 square miles, you can talk to somebody in 95% of that area. And that's some pretty stretched and sometimes rugged terrain. So we're very pleased about that. It'd be a real shame to lose that advantage. The second thing is to reiterate the fact that we have now a mini version of what the state is trying to create in terms of the interoperability system. And we not only have the system, but we've got the people operating the system, trained in the response, used to working together. So that integrated system is something that the governing boards do not want to lose. It's a resource that we wish everybody could have. We think that the fact that this bill does have potential application other places in the state would give them, you know, some tools to attain those same sorts of goals. We appreciate very much your attention, your time yesterday and again today, and Commissioner Cowan, she's a graduate, remember, of the county system. There's only one county commissioner that ever made it to president. That was Harry Truman.
Let's leave it that way.
Sure you want to? Okay. We'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It was too much. Welcome, Judge Dahlman.
Yes. I'll just say I'm very, very pleased with these people that you see back here. They're the ones that have carried the ball on all of this. They're the ones that have met on the nitty-gritty meetings, you know, evening meetings, putting this all together to make this happen. And, so we're very pleased. We think that we can take it another step. The other thing that we're thinking about is on into the future, integrating this with other systems that are already in place that will enhance the system, and we're thinking about economic development as well. It's not just our two counties, but economic development. We're thinking in terms of inviting companies to the area, and then the other areas that we're looking at is what it's going to take to advance this system. So these men and women already know how to do it. They already are operating it on a daily basis. I know, in fact, just anecdotally, one person there in Boardman, where I live, decided one day they were going to fill up with gas and not pay. The cameras that we operate zoomed in on the license plate, the tape that they had, and down the road, the sheriff for OSP was able to catch that person and take care of that little issue because of the system that we've got in place. And so it's something that we use every day. It's increased all of the communication between all of these people. That's what pleases me. We've got some great responders,
and this communication system enhances their capabilities, and they take it very, very seriously. So it's exciting to see how all that works together. And so we're asking you to help us do that on into the future. Thank you for your time.
It sounds as if breaking the law in Umatilla and Morrow County is not a really good idea.
No, and when they start following us to Salem, they really get concerned.
And that. You had to watch your driving tactics, didn't you?
We did.
Are there any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And always looking for something to do to save that chemical depot instead of having it just be brushed into the dust. So if anybody's interested in incinerating garbage and opening up a rendering plant, talk to me.
Okay.
Communication system set up, ready to go in case things go south. And Commissioner Grassley is here too. Are you a judge? Yes.
Yeah.
A judge, another judge in the room.
And two, Mike MacArthur.
Mike.
Yeah.
Yes.
Former judge.
We're well represented by the county structure that involves the county judge. I can see that.
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, you're right. That facility was built at great, great expense to the federal government. And the decommissioning of that is written into federal law. It's we've talked about this occasionally, and there hasn't recently been any particularly will on our part to take on the federal bear once again, but I suppose if there was some really strong encouragement from the legislature and you appointed Chair Cowan to be our leader, we'd send a delegation back to Washington, D.C. in a heartbeat.
And take her with you.
Yeah.
I'll second the Chair Cowan nomination.
Thank you, gentlemen. Is there any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Got her vacation plan for her.
Any other input on this subject? We have other guests with us today. Oh, what a surprise. Welcome. Welcome.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. We're very much in support. The counties generally are in support of this legislation. We see that it does have application, may very well have application around the state, and support the bill and hope you will too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Grasty, Harney County Judge, and I would echo that thought. We've recently put together a system in Harney County with surrounding areas, and takes in about 20-25% of the entire state of Oregon, and it's already sitting there. So this could become an opportunity for us as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. And to all of you who came to support this, we appreciate the turnout. It's always nice to have an audience for our meetings as well, and we appreciate all the work and the support that you've done. Anyone else who wanted to testify on this issue? Okay. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to echo your comments about how far in the distance they traveled in the different agencies that represent all these elected officials and leaders in their communities. I appreciate that. You know, our job, I think, on this will be fairly easy, but it's going to be some hard work of the men and women in your communities to push this forward and tell people why it's important, and I know you'll be able to get that done. So I want to say hello to a good friend of mine from Class 136 of BPSD, the Undersheriff, and Scott Stanton here from Hermiston Fire. So great to see everybody out there, and thanks for coming.
This is beginning to look like old home week here, isn't it?
It's feeling pretty good. I'm pretty comfortable with this crowd.
With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3254. Committee, are you comfortable with opening a work session?
Let's do it.
We do have to backtrack on the other one that we jumped the gun on, but this was advertised as a work session. So with that, I will open a work session on House Bill 3254. And note that this is really a bill that is simply trying to give this particular type of communication district the opportunity to form a special district. It's still up to them to do it. It just broadens statutes a little bit. So with that, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 3254 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. We have a motion to Representative Freeman.
Can we have discussion?
In discussion, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to support this bill. I've been through this at a city local level, and We went through it with a extension service district. And already in the city of Roseburg, the compression from that passing is about $68,000 a year that it took out of the city fund to let the extension service, and that was at 24 cents. So you'd want to all be very careful to make sure you're not just taking money from one spot and putting it somewhere else. But I do like giving the voters a chance to decide where their priorities are, and I wish you the best of luck in your area convincing the voters to pay more taxes.
And, Madam Chair.
Representative Riley.
Thank you. I need to amend my motion to add the referral to the Rules Committee.
Thank you very much for catching that. I hadn't paid attention to my asterisks. Thank you. Point well taken. It is a challenge. We could talk about taxation issues and property tax limitations, but it's probably not the time and place to do that. So with that, we have before us a motion to move House Bill 3254 with the referral to rule, with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to rules, as previously mentioned. Representative Escobar?
I have to ask probably a stupid question here, but if I don't ask the question, that's really stupid. I don't see a fiscal on this, even though I know it's not a fiscal.
I'm sorry, I did not make note of the fact that we do have a report of a potential fiscal impact on state and local governments. Mr. Molina? I'm sorry?
Yeah, I'm paperless.
Oh, I see. I get where we're going here. Let me get out my appropriate form. Your motion's on hold for just a moment,
I got
sir.
That.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have too many things on my pile of stuff here. I misunderstood what I was hearing you say. I thought you said that we had a fiscal on it. I think that we have the option of moving to suspend the rules and moving it forward to its subsequent referral without the fiscal impact being available. And then there are 7 days to get that attached. I think just within in the timing, we could go ahead and move it. Are you comfortable with that? Would you?
I'm in my motion to say exactly what you just said.
Well, he's a tricky devil today.
We have before us a motion from Representative Riley moves that we suspend the rules for the purpose of moving House Bill 3254 without fiscal. Without the fiscal impact statement being available on for review, and moving House Bill 3250 forward to a referral to rules. Is that what you said, sir?
Exactly.
Madam Chair, do those have to be two separate motions?
That's kind of what I was debating as I was saying that out loud.
I think you would be wise to separate them.
And we will do that.
Then we're covered.
We have before us a motion to suspend the rules for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3254 without the revenue impact statement being available for review. Is there any objection?
I'm not comfortable without seeing the fiscal on it.
Okay. Could we take a roll call vote on that one then, please?
Okay. We're Cindy Spoon.
Aye.
Escobar.
No.
Huh?
Aye.
Riley?
Aye.
Reitner?
No.
Freeman?
No.
Matthews?
Aye.
McCallan?
Aye. Having achieved the required majority, House Bill 3254 will be moved on without its fiscal, which we have 7 days to attach. And then at this point, we have before us a motion to move House Bill 3254 to its referral to rules. Could we get a roll call vote on that, please, too?
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Escobar.
Aye.
Huh?
Aye.
Riley.
Aye.
Widener.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Matthews.
Aye.
Chair Callan.
Aye. Thank you. Having received the required majority, House Bill 3254 is moved forward to rules with a due pass recommendation. And again, I thank you all for coming today. I apologize for trying to feel my way through that one in the process, but you know what? It'll get done. These time constraints. Yes.
This is the first session we've ever done.
Don't you have it?
Yes, I think, committee, just for everyone's understanding, this is a new process that we're following this year about the fiscals, and we've gotten a little bogged down with timing, so we'll have to work our way through these things. It will catch up with this bill before it processes through rules, so that is certain. With that, we will move back and reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 98, and with my apologies for having sort of sidetracked your time. We have the testimony from Paula Brown, and look at there, Mr. Evans is still here. Thank you. We were discussing the establishment of a task force on veterans transportation issues. Of course, we have already moved forward, but we're going to need to back up on the actions that we took around SJM2. But let's talk about the task force and how this would come to be.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. For the record, my name is Paul Evans, still policy advisor to Governor Kulongoski. We'll see how the week goes, but right now I am. I must confess, every time I come up here, people leave, and I'm trying to figure out that's a good thing or a bad thing, but we'll just kind of press on.
We should have made them sit until we could have got your testimony. I'm sure it was riveting.
Yeah.
The pro loves you, Paul.
It's very often not riveting. But
here comes Lynn.
All right.
Well, that's okay. Bob,
darn. We thought somebody was going to come and listen. Are you leaving already?
He
left, too, when he saw you, Paul.
My shower. Yeah. Last just
trying
last
to make
week.
It feel better.
This is great. Thanks,
guys. Okay. So, for the benefit of the listening audience,
yes,
we seem to have been dissolving here as committee members find some business that they need to take out into the hall.
Yes, ma'am.
And we are struggling to bring our attention back to Mr. Evans.
Senate Bill 98 is, quite frankly, it was ironic that Judge Grassley was here, because a lot of this discussion started in Burns, having to do with the remote and rural nature of the state. And what we recognized is, like my grandfather used to tell me, when you're up to your neck in alligators, it's hard to remember you went to the swamp to drain it. There are so many issues in transportation that we did not have the time to do an adequate job. So we put this on the list, and we've shared with this committee before that there were really three issues that we just knew we didn't have enough time to do justice to. And this is one. And especially now, although we didn't know it at the time, but with the potential stimulus package and some of the priorities that transportation in general are might yield from that, we feel that it's a good opportunity to get the right people around the table. I'm probably not one of those right people when it comes to transportation, but the right people around the room to look at what transit districts can and can't do in terms of those that exist, what existing structures may be able to serve not just veterans but also vulnerable populations, how we can make the most out of the dollars available for transportation. It's a subject that I know the task force had a great appetite to get into. We just didn't have enough time. And that's really the crux of Senate Bill 98. And I'm sure we'll try to answer any questions you might have.
He's coming back.
Could you...
Even the general left?
Even the general left. What?
Could you address a little bit for us
Sure.
the proposed structure of this task force? Because we're not moving task forces forward this session
Right.
Directly because of the funding issues, maybe you could talk about that a little
Right.
bit.
Right. And Chair Cowan, I'll take a first shot at it, and then Tom will clean up the mess that I make. But the bottom line is this could go as a task force, or it could certainly go as an interim work effort from this committee. I mean, the structure is not as important to us as the fact we have the conversation, and the conversation does need to be sanctioned from the legislature. And the reason for that is you set policy, and if this is a priority for you, then it will be a priority for some of the agencies. Ideally, it would involve a representative from the transit associations. It would involve ODOT. It would certainly involve, probably in this case, a representative from the federal VA in terms of how they actually apportion their funds. There's really two ways. One is through the volunteer van system that exists, as well as for individual clients, they'll do a per diem, and we want to find out the best way to be able to make that happen. In addition to, it would make sense to have county representation as well as some of the community action folks that are on the ground dealing with some of the folks that would potentially use these services.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Mann, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. We have to apologize for all these task forces because that was not our intent. The intent as we came out of the task force was to have work groups. We had done some work on all these issues. Let's not pretend we didn't examine them at all, because we did. And we know the direction we wanted to go. So when we came to Legislative Council with our bill package, we said we'd like to have some work groups so we could start pushing forward on these ideas to put some meat on the bones. And they said you can't have work groups. You must have task forces. And so when you read Bill Digest, you'll see probably 100 different task force ideas this session. And we're kind of getting lost in all the task forces, but I would echo Paul's comments as the project officer of the task force. What we really wanted to do was have work groups during the interim that would push forward and have legislative approval of those, so that it just wasn't a bunch of guys getting together and coming up with ideas, but this was something the legislature felt was good public policy. And so that's unfortunately, we ended up with task force and not work groups. But I think that as you're thinking of these, maybe thinking of them as work groups might be a better framing for where we're pushing.
Thank you. I think in follow-up to that, we do not currently have a fiscal before us on this bill, and I'm not going to push this one without it. I do note that the bill indicates the Department of Veterans Affairs shall provide staff for the task force. So I am assuming you will be part of that discussion regarding a fiscal.
Madam Chair, we've turned in our fiscal, and our fiscal was $5,000. I learned from my budget officer on another task force bill, what fiscal is doing is they're looking at that language and saying, well, what grade level is that staffer going to be, and then extrapolating on their own what the fiscal should be instead of what we're giving them. Because I had a fiscal on another bill that was $1,500, and they decided it should be $44,000. So we're struggling a little bit with fiscal, because our agency, when we turn in a fiscal for $1,500, means we're going to eat the cost in other funds to do this, the same way we did on the governor's Veterans Task Force. So when I turn in a fiscal of $5,000, that's the fiscal. It's not $40,000.
And Chair Cowan, on some of these, we have the template in place to do the work. What we don't have is the people around the table yet. Tom and I will certainly be involved in the process, although we're not experts in transportation or the transit districts. That's the piece that's missing. The task force at 24 stops around the state, we have an idea of what's out there, but now comes the critical time where we actually sit through and go through back and forth on, all right, does this model work for every community, or why doesn't it? How can the current language, this existing statute, allow for flexibility? What is the VA rules now that they've come up with a new budget and new monies into the system? How can they or can't they be used? And ultimately, having that dialogue with AOC and LOC and other entities, when they're looking at transportation systems, if they're looking at the possibility of being a little more flexible in how they interpret it as well. It's that higher level discussions that we just didn't have time to do. It's not that we don't know what the veterans need. It's that we did not feel comfortable coming to you telling you that we had the right answer yet. So I, with this task force and even the other bill that has to do with the reintegration piece, much of the work has been done, but we wanted to stop where we were at, get legislative sanction to continue the work so we could have those higher-level discussions.
Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Aren't we kind of circling the wagons here, though? We should figure out how much this costs and offset it by just having the veterans go into their local
doctor to their local hospital.
Chair Cowan, Representative Esquivel, the fee basis system is one of three pieces of our overall strategy. It's the VA's historical reluctance to get into fee basis that is right now our reality. That's why we actually introduced the three memorials, to try to push the conversation. One is on transportation, making it easier to get people to and from. The other one is fee basis, to make sure that they at least consider that. And the third one is, if they're not going to fix transportation and they're not going to let us use the doctors close, then they've got to robust up the facilities they put closer to where the people live. They've got to choose between those three. And unfortunately, at this point, while at the federal level I think they're throwing more money at the veteran system, I do not believe at this point that there is a holistic approach focused on those questions yet. I have faith that our congressional delegation and others will continue working on that. I even have faith that long-term you're going to see fee basis be much more available. But right now, we're still in that scenario where, looking at Harney County, for example, they're taking cans in to get extra change to put it in the gas, or to buy gas for the van that was bought 5-6 years ago that's insured at the base level because it's a volunteer paying the insurance. I mean, that's what they've got to get back and forth.
I'm hoping that the two of you sitting there can help me get my brain around this a little bit. We have discussed HJM 12, which essentially asks Congress to enact legislation looking at these transportation needs in relationship to health care.
Yes, ma'am.
We have next before us SJM 2, which urges Congress to create and fund a statewide veterans transportation system. And we have right now, as we're discussing, Senate Bill 98, which establishes the task force. This has come to us from the Senate, having been passed on the Senate side. Was there a fiscal impact attached to that on the Senate side?
Madam Chair, there must have been, because they have the same rules. They won't let a bill out of committee without a fiscal.
So, I guess I'm simply a little confused. I think I don't think there's any doubt that there's a sentiment on this committee that veterans need quality health care, and we need an adequate transportation system to allow people to access that if they aren't able to access it at home. I'm struggling a bit with the appropriate methodology. I understand we want some of our directives to go to our congressional delegation for work at the congressional level, mm-hmm. but when you mention that there then could very well be federal dollars coming, and I want to make sure that we handle these things appropriately at the state level as well.
Chair Cowan,
can you help me with this dilemma?
I can try, and then again, Tom can certainly add. Chair Cowan, members of the committee, when I say money is coming into the VA, what I mean by that is that there are, in the grand picture, just in sheer politics, there's a recognition that the war in Iraq and Afghanistan is coming to an end, and there is a lot of interest, not yet commitment, but interest to put money into traditional programs having to do with homelessness, having to do with VHA, having to do with benefits, having to do with care. Transportation is one of those issues that is kind of always in the force multiplier facilitator category, that it doesn't get a lot of attention inside the VA because the folks at the 10th floor on Vermont Street are told, well, you have a per diem base that individuals can be reimbursed at that is not up to current standards, at least especially with gas at $2 or $3, much less the $4 it was last year. And you have a lot of folks in the decision-making process that still think 25 miles, 35 miles is the extent to which people have to travel to get to care. I mean, that's one of our challenges. So our strategy was, on the one hand, to continue fighting at the congressional level to say, look, transportation is not only a big issue, but HJM 12, which was kind of an add-on to this process, but focuses on a differential per diem, so that if people live outside an urban area, arguably, there should be a little bit of an increase in terms of the money to reimburse the gas just because of wear and tear in vehicle and things like that. In the meantime, because Congress, even when it wants to do the right thing, still takes a while, The idea is to use this task force to try to tie together currently existing systems, current transit districts, current communities that have a bus or train or whatever they have, and try to find partnerships to make do with what we can until we can fix the bigger problem. So that's kind of how they all fit together. There's the short term, medium term, and long term. The short term is Corvallis, for example, has some things that they do really well to get people back and forth that help veterans. It doesn't actually say, there's no scarlet V on their chest that says for veterans, but they do things that actually work to get veterans to and from. There's other communities that have transit systems that we think could learn from those models, and that's part of having this conversation, not just creating something new, but sharing things that work around the state. At the federal level, forcing the discussion about either more transportation dollars or care more available, fee basis, or lower leveled or more localized care, that's really where the push needs to be. At the congressional level, and even inside the new VA, because they have a new administration that's still transitioning over, they're still thinking in terms of, well, how do we get the money to the folks in a 90-day cycle as opposed to a 180-day cycle on benefit forms? On the VHA side, right now they're currently, I know, having to do some crisis management because of a way in which the hospitals were not cleaning particular instruments that potentially caused some deaths. So right now they're up to their neck in alligators. And our focus here is from Oregon, hopefully saying, look, you guys got these things you got to focus on and work on. In the meantime, in the interim, we're going to try to make sure and get every last little ounce out of the dollars that are currently being spent on transportation where it makes sense.
Madam Chair, I might just add in, I understand the confusion in that the VA system is a federal system. The VA hospital, the VA benefits, compensation, PEN, everything that we do is federal. However, the state has decided through policy you're going to have a State Department of Veterans Affairs, and we are advocates for veterans. So we get into the mix at the state level, advocating for veterans for those federal benefits. So where it gets confusing is when we say, well, we want the state to do something that really is a federal responsibility. We as a task force said, you know what, transportation veterans to and from a hospital in a rural area is a federal responsibility. It's their federal benefit that they have earned. They should be transported. We also know, though, that that is not necessarily a reality. The feds aren't going to come in tomorrow and transport our veterans to and from hospitals. So as a State Department of Veterans Affairs, we said, as advocates for veterans, we need to do something because we can't just let that problem sit. And that's where the confusion comes in, is whose responsibility is it? Well, honestly, it's the federal government's responsibility. But as advocates, we feel very strongly that we can't just let a veteran in Burns go without care that he's earned just because he lives in Burns, and the federal VA is not going to do something about it. So that's where the task force kind of comes in and says, the state now is saying we're going to try to do things that really are federal responsibilities.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, last session, and it was half in jest, half not in jest, when we put forward a TRICARE bill that basically tried to incent providers to increase the number of TRICARE patients, which actually, in a weird way, penalized them and weird interpretation there. But the bottom line is when we put that bill in there, one of the keys we were going to try to do is keep an accounting of the funds that the state was expending on that federal priority and send a bill every year to the Congress saying that they had not lived up to their responsibility. I still believe that's not a bad idea when you look at the entire package that the state is putting forward. These things are not rocket science. If you're going to mobilize a nation for war, you got to pay for the warrior after the war. And last time I checked, Oregon hasn't declared war on another territory or state for some time. But we are also not going to let people suffer because we're waiting for the feds to do something. I certainly understand the conundrum and the frustration. I would certainly expect at some point in accounting to be able to compare to the federal government what they've not been doing, because, again, this should have been anticipated, and the problem's not going away.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Well, we do not have a fiscal on this bill, so I did not plan to work it today anyway, and we're going to need to come back to HJM 12, and we will also be talking about SJM 2. Hopefully, with the committee's indulgence, we can move this forward and try to request the fiscal so that we know what we're doing, and then bring the three of these back to sort of work as a package So if we could proceed with trying to get that information, that would be helpful.
And Chair Cowan, again, even if this doesn't become, even if the bill doesn't move forward, we would be satisfied, I think we'd be satisfied, with this being an item for work during the interim by the committee. I mean, that we get a bill is not so nearly as important as that we have the conversation.
Okay. Representative Bloom?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Something that you said, Paul, or Tom, maybe, I can't remember, one of you.
If it was smart, it's him.
Okay. About the fiscals being coming out differently, and when you submit, I would imagine that's not rocket science either, in terms of if this is what we want to do, this is what we expect it to cost, so this is what we are wanting you to put in the fiscal. And if it comes out something different, is there any conversation between fiscal and you before this actually comes out to us?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, I just found out about that 10 minutes before the committee on another bill, and so I was going to have that conversation to see if I could convince them that when we turn in a fiscal, we kind of know what we're doing and we know what we're saying, and that we actually will eat those costs, because we understand with the task force that, like Paul said, the infrastructure, because of what we did with the governor's task force, the infrastructure is set up to do these things now. We have all the pieces in place to do task forces from ODVA's perspective. So when we thought about the Transportation Task Force and Women Veterans Task Force, and all the things we're going to do, we are ready to go. And so I understand fiscal's perspective, saying, well, if you're going to say in the bill you're going to have ODVA staff it, you incur a cost. But we didn't think that would end up in a fiscal to slow down and kill a bill, because we said we can manage that cost internally. So I think we just need to articulate that better with fiscal so they understand. I do know that my budget officer had that conversation directly with our fiscal officer, and that didn't gel. So I need to work on that, Representative.
Well, we are going to indicate an intent to hold a work session, which will drive getting that information. I do have a bit of concern, because it designates appointees from a variety of departments, right? And if that's staff time, there's an issue with it. If it's not, that's a separate issue. So right. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 98 and encourage you folks to work on that. Unfortunately, committee, I neglected that HJM 12 was only advertised as a public hearing and not a work session, so we moved HJM 12 inappropriately, which means I am, I think, going to reopen the work session on HJM 12 and request a motion to suspend the rules and rescind the motion. Representative Riley?
So moved.
Yeah. Great. So, okay, we have before us a motion to rescind the rules and suspend the rules and rescind the motion, the due pass motion on HJM 12 until that can be published for a work session. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you. So we'll have those two, and I will now open a public hearing on SJM 2. Mr. Molina.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 2 urges Congress to create and fund a statewide veterans transportation system that will transport veterans, particularly disabled veterans, to and from medical facilities. There is no amendment, no fiscal revenue impact indicated here. Madam Chair.
But we don't have an official fiscal.
It just says no expenditure.
Yeah, no expenditure.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And I am assuming that Paula Brown has now become Tom Mann. It's just a wild guess.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Mann, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I apologize that neither my director nor my deputy director are here today. They had both intended to be, and both have been called away. We've been having this discussion, so I don't want to beat a dead horse. I believe in your package you have my director's testimony from the first public hearing we had on SJM 2. This is the continuation of the conversation we were just having. This is the federal piece that says, federal government, we believe you're responsible for creating and paying for a veterans transportation system here in the state of Oregon. Would you please do so? It's a very simple bill, or memorial, I should say. We have talked to our federal delegation about this, as we've talked to the delegation about all our memorials, and I believe Representative or Congressman DeFazio is in charge of this one. We have meetings set up, Paul and I, with the entire delegation. We're meeting one at a time to figure out where they are in the process of putting these bills into the congressional process, just to make sure that not only are we telling you that they're doing this, but they're actually following up and doing that. We are traveling, I think, on the 24th of April to meet with a bunch of these folks, so we're very excited about that. So I won't beat a dead horse. This is just the federal piece of our transportation concept.
And before the session ends, and the committee will look forward to a report back on how that is progressing. Do you have anything to add? Okay. With that, I think just in the interest of making sure that this all comes together, I'm going to close the public hearing on SJM2 and hold off on a work session and have that on all three of these together when we get all the appropriate paperwork for each one. Does that work for you?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes, it does.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I now need to, first of all, we will carry over House Bill 3470. We don't yet have the fiscal on that one. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2718. Molina.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2718 creates a task force on women veterans' health care to study health care needs of women veterans and submit its findings and recommendations to the governor no later than October 1, 2010. The task force ceases to exist at the beginning of the next biennial legislative session, declares emergency, effective on passage. There was, as you recall, on April the 9th, we did adopt the amendment, the dash one. And we now have the dash one for the fiscal and the revenue before us.
And this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Yes, Madam Chair, it does. I apologize. This does have a subsequent to Ways and Means.
No, I just want to make sure I'm straight here.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so we have before us a fiscal impact of $44,575. We'll remind the committee once again that we have already adopted the dash one amendments on that, and it looks like we have all the paperwork in place to move that forward to its next stop, which is Ways and Means. Representative Widener.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3470 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Could we back up a little bit?
We're
in a work session on
2718.
We have a motion before us to move House Bill 2718 as amended with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Am I correct?
That would be correct. I just needed to look down one line.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Debbie, could you call the roll on that, please?
Aye.
Escobar? Aye.
Kahn?
Aye.
Riley?
Aye.
Widener?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Matthews?
Aye.
Chair Cowan?
Aye. House Bill 2718, having received the required majority, is referred to the House Committee on Ways and Means. I know that Representative Gelser would like to be involved with carrying this bill. We'll see how. I don't think that's possible as it comes out of Ways and Means. So I was just making note of her request. That we will close the work session on House Bill 2718, open a work session on House Bill 2744.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2744 requires all public, private, and not-for-profit entities to provide 14 days unpaid leave to half or a full-time employee who is a spouse of a citizen soldier ordered to active duty under Title 32 or Title 10 of the United States Code. Makes failure to grant leave or discrimination against the spouse unlawful practice It requires Bureau of Labor and Industries to enforce provision of act, declares emergency effective on passage. We heard this on also April the 9th. We adopted the amendment, and we do have before us the fiscal that we requested for that, and there is no revenue impact. Madam Chair.
So we have no revenue impact, and we have already approved the Dash 1 amendments. This does not have a subsequent referral. Are we ready? Representative Widener?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2744 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Thank you. We have a motion before us to move House Bill 2744 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Escobar, you looked like you were studying this carefully. Are you okay on this one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to be sure. Abby? Sorry, I don't think they heard you. Oh, I'm sorry. Aye.
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 Riley.
Aye.
Widener.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Matthews.
Aye.
Chair
Fallon. Aye. House Bill 2744, having received the required majority, is moved to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Representative Escobar, I am assuming you'd like to carry this bill?
I would love to carry the bill.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. I think I've hit a state of serenity. I was just daydreaming. Sorry.
Would you like me to share?
No,
my
it was just such a mellow committee today, maybe.
This committee brings a state of serenity. That's an interesting development.
The Serenity Committee.
Kumbaya.
Anything I can do for you here. I'm glad you're less confused than I. In case I haven't, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2744.
I think it was Paul Evans who put everybody to sleep.
I'm not asleep. I'm just so weak.
But we are not done yet, Representative Boone. With that, I will open a work session on House Bill 2510.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2510 implements a lifetime veterans hiring preference for public sector positions, repeals the 15-year limitation, conforms to current ORS form and language, effective on passage. As you recall, on April the 9th, we adopted the Dash 2 amendment that redefined the civil service positions that would provide that clarity of enforcement for BOLI. And we do have before us that fiscal produced just today, actually, the Dash 2 amendment for the fiscal on this. Madam Chair.
That there is no fiscal impact?
Reading over it. It's basically an indeterminate fiscal impact is what they're arguing. What happens is they can produce it if we're passing this, and they can then turn around and produce a policy, internal policy that LFO has.
But we need to pass the bill, and then they'll develop?
That's not what that says.
I'm not sure.
Representative Riley?
Representative Riley?
Yeah, that's not what that says. What that says is they can't determine it because there are too many unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
And in with our current state, what does that mean for our action?
That means that we have a fiscal. We have what's required for us to pass the bill. And the fiscal is unknown.
Okay.
And unknowable.
Unknown.
Madam Chair, if I could.
President Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it has more to do with the fact that it's going to expand the opportunity for more veterans, obviously, that would qualify under preference points, which could, in fact, then mean there's more veterans that might complain that they're not being given the preferential points and require BOLI then to do further studies. I think that's why it's indeterminate, because they can't know, again, what they don't know yet. But we do know it will expand
that to veterans. So I'm personally comfortable with
there may be no fiscal impact. There may be some. They don't know.
Understood. Yeah. And I had some information raised to me just prior to the hearing that, frankly, I wasn't able to comprehend. I will allow either of you to speak to this, the issue that you were trying to tell me before we take a vote on this measure.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, I'm Ann Hannes with the Association of Oregon Counties. And Bob Easterbrook from Boley and I were talking just before this, and I think he and I are going to discuss how we make sure that we clarify that not all counties have a strict civil service system. And so as we read the law again, we saw that you can employ other types of systems in order to be able to provide preference for veterans, not just a strict point system. So we wanted to have some flexibility in recognizing that not all systems are a strict point system, and that a lot of them, although they are a merit-based system. So Bob and I are going to work on that. If by chance we do need to have an amendment, we would present that on the Senate side, or we would just clarify that in correspondence between the two of us.
Madam Chair, committee members, Bob Easterbrook from the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I would just echo what Ann said. I think as far as Boley is concerned, the definitions that we presented to you in the Dash 2 amendments to 2510 will cover all of the folks that need to be covered, all of the public employers and all of the employment systems that we believe were originally intended to be covered by the veterans' preference will be, but we're definitely going to continue the discussion with AOC and make sure that we are successful in covering all those folks as we intend to do.
Thank you. Are there any questions of these two individuals?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time.
I wanted to make sure that we got everything heard.
Mm-hmm.
With that, I think we're ready for a motion.
Madam Chair?
Representative Matthews.
I believe we have to first adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Is that correct?
We have already done that.
We've already done that.
This is as amended with the Dash 2s.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then I would like to make a motion. We'd move House Bill 2510 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. We have a motion before us that House Bill 2510 be moved to the House floor as amended with the Dash 2s with the due pass recommendation. If we could call the roll, please.
Aye.
Heslabel.
Aye.
Tom.
Aye.
Riley.
Aye.
Wagner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Matthews.
Aye.
McCallum.
Aye. House Bill 2510, having received the required majority, is moved to the House floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Yes, I believe the sponsors of this bill are Representative Wisnett and Barker. We'll check with them to see if they would like to carry this bill.
If they decline, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to volunteer.
Okay, we'll have Representative Matthews on standby, and perhaps we can see if one of them wants to carry it. We've got a co-carrier or something. I will let our committee administrator work that out. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2510. And committee, I just had one little bit of information that I wanted to share with you here, if I can just dig it out, I hope. I had a few too many papers coming in today. I apologize. I wanted to let you know that we have a letter from Representative Jeff Merkley, Senator Ron Wyden, addressed to the Postmaster General, writing in support of efforts to recognize World War II NISI veterans through a commemorative stamp, understanding that the Stamp Advisory Committee will be meeting next month, but this is not going to be considered apparently, so they are urging them to reconsider that decision and consider our efforts to move that forward with all the appropriate supporting documentation.
Madam Chair, can we get a copy of that?
I'm certain that the administrator will be happy to make copies for all of us. With that, we will close this meeting of the House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee.
Hey, thank you. Right?
Thank you all for your work today.
Thank you. Thank you, Davina. That's all you got to do. Firefighters, everybody's good the way it is. Get the
All right.
Throw it away.